A Psalm of David. Answer me when I call to you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Be merciful to me and hear my prayer. How long, O man, will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love delusions and seek false gods? Know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call to him. In your anger, do not sin. When you're on your bed, search your hearts and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and trust in the Lord. Many are asking, who can show us any good? Let the light of your face shine upon us, O Lord. You have filled my heart with greater joy than when their grain and new wine abound. I will lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. Amen. As we read Psalm 3, we saw David fleeing from Jerusalem to escape sure defeat and also almost certain death from the forces of his son Absalom, who vastly outnumbered David's own forces. Absalom had done such a good job of turning people to follow him. If we look back at this point in David's career, if you like, or his kingship, on the surface it had seemed as if David was at the height of his power. After many years of struggle with Saul and being nearly killed by him on several occasions, God had placed David firmly on the throne. And after a series of wars when David was firmly on the throne against foreign enemies, at least for a time there seems to be peace. The period of warfare had come to an end. David was firmly established. And we might expect that David's later years as king would have been a period of peace and complete security. Yet it is at this point precisely in his reign when you would expect, as he gets older, that he is secure, that he has the loyalty of the people. It's at this point that the troubles, which are the indirect fruit of his own infidelity and polygamy, these troubles reach a climax of disaster. His son Absalom had by deceit and guile turned the hearts of the majority of the people against David and towards himself. So, we see David having to run for his life, leaving his palace and his capital city to be taken over by enemies. And many of those enemies have been David's own trusted friends and officials. What could be more discouraging and embittering than to see one's own beloved son, whom one had just forgiven, and one's former companions and leading aides, intent on dishonoring one's name and character and years of kingship? But that's the situation we read about in Psalm 3. Now, both Psalm 3 and Psalm 4 seem to have been written during this period, when David was on the run from Absalom and unsure yet of the outcome of events. Now, we're not informed explicitly that Psalm 4 was written at this time in the way that we're told that Psalm 3 was written then. But there are several factors, several pointers here, which make this seem likely. The Jews always regarded Psalm 3 from way back before the time of Christ as a morning psalm, because the psalm speaks about waking up in the morning, and they regarded Psalm 4 as an evening psalm, quite naturally from verse 8, I will lie down and sleep in peace. So these two psalms are paired together in this way in the Psalter, a morning psalm followed by an evening psalm. Now, in addition, there are linguistic similarities between the two. If you look at verse 6 of Psalm 4, it says, "Many are asking, who can show us any good?" And you look at Psalm 3, verse 2, "Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him." And if you look at 4:8, "I'll lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety." And you compare that with 3:5, "I lie down and sleep, I wake again because the Lord sustains me." So there are some linguistic similarities. These are the only two psalms out of the 150 where the direct words of others follow the phrase, "many are saying," "many are asking." Actually, the Hebrew is the same. "Many are saying," "many are asking." "Many are saying" in 3:2, "many are asking" in 4:6. The content of Psalm 4 also fits with the situation of Absalom's rebellion. And we'll see that as we go along today. And the psalm, of course, both these psalms are attributed to David in the title, in the heading. So I want to suggest to you that it is very likely that this psalm, Psalm 4, is also written in the context where David is fleeing from Absalom. Now let's turn to the content of the psalm. Verse 1 opens with David crying out to God, "Answer me when I call to you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress, be merciful to me, and hear my prayer." Now, David, of course, is in a desperate situation, fleeing from Absalom. In three parallel lines, because that's what you've got in that first verse, "Answer me, give me relief, be merciful to me," he asks God to intervene on his behalf. His first petition is that God will answer when he calls to him. Now, David addresses God. If you have an NIV, "O my righteous God." Actually, if in some other translation, some of you have, may have, "God of my righteousness." David means that God is the one who declares him to be righteous. Even though his enemies are mocking him as a sinner who'd been abandoned by God because of his failures personally and as a leader. Now, David doesn't mean that his own personal righteousness is sufficient to ensure that God will answer his prayers. What David means is that God is the vindicator of his people. God is the one who declares his people righteous. God of my righteousness, the God who makes me righteous, who declares me to be righteous, the one who is the author and giver of my righteousness. David's second petition is simply, "God, give me relief from my distress." And his third, "God, be merciful to me and hear my prayer." This makes it clear David isn't saying, "I'm righteous enough, God, for you to hear me and answer my prayers." He knows he's absolutely dependent on the mercy of God. And all of us, of course, pray like this over and over again. "Answer me when I call. Give me relief from my distress. Be merciful to me." That brings us to verse 2. And in verses 2 through 4, David is addressing his enemies. In verses 2 through 4, David is addressing his enemies. "How long, O man, will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love delusions and seek lies?" And that's, again, a better translation there than false gods. And you'll see that in your footnotes if you've got an NIV. It suggests it as an alternative. "How long will you love delusions and seek lies? Know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call to him. In your anger, do not sin. When you're on your bed, search your hearts and be silent." Now, those three verses are all addressed to David's enemies. He's turning to reflect on those who have risen up against him. How long, O man, will you turn my glory into shame? Now, the Hebrew word for men here is not the ordinary one used to refer to just everybody and anybody. It rather designates the prominent men, the leading officials of David's government, who have joined the opposing forces. So it's how long, O prominent one, O leading men, will you turn my glory, my honor, into shame? Their betrayal is a particularly bitter blow for David. For his own former leading men are the chorus of those, the leaders of the chorus of those dishonoring the one who just a little while before was their king. Instead of giving him honor, glory, they are shaming him with their mocking and abusive taunts against him. But David says to them, "How long will you love delusions and seek or follow lies? Don't you realize," says David, "that you are following a delusion?" David knows that God has not anointed Absalom to be the king. So those who are following Absalom have fallen in love with a delusion rather than the truth about who is the rightful king in Jerusalem. Your rebellion, David says, is based on wishful thinking and false statements, on lies. And of course, that's an entirely accurate reflection on what had taken place. Absalom had won the love and following of people by lying about David and by lying about himself, by presenting himself as a man committed to justice and faithfulness. That's what he'd said to all the people. Those who had fallen for Absalom's charms, his good looks and his charismatic personality and his statements about what a great king he would be, were literally in love with a delusion. And that's, of course, David's point here. Now, in verse 3, David turns from his enemy's estimate of him, turning his glory into shame. David turns from that to God's attitude towards him. And this, of course, is the best way for any of us to deal with the mockery, with the criticism of others. You know, what is God's attitude towards me, regardless of what anybody else may think? And what does David say? He says, "Know that the Lord," the truth is, you may have this low view of me and mock me, but the truth is, "the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call to him." Now, David is not claiming to be a perfect model of godliness. No, he is rather making a statement of faith about God's commitment to his people. David's confidence is that the Lord will hear him when he calls out to him. And this is our confidence as well. No matter what anyone else says about us or about God, God has committed himself to hearing the prayers of his people, and he's committed himself to coming to their aid. Now, in verse 4, David gives some advice to his enemies, to those who have sided with Absalom and dismissed David as a has-been. "Your time as king is over." And this is David's advice: "In your anger, do not sin. When you are on your bed, search your hearts and be silent." What David says to them is this: "You may think you are justified in being angry with me." But David says, "Watch out. You may be sinning yourselves." This is true for all of us. Even when we think that our anger against others is righteous anger, We need to remember that we ourselves are so caught in sin that our responses are very rarely completely righteous. In your anger, do not sin. The scripture says the anger of men does not work the righteousness of God. And we need to know that about ourselves. All of us get righteously angry sometimes, we say, and we get on our high horse and we denounce other people. But David's saying, hold on a moment. You know, stop and do some reflection about your own life before you so readily get angry with other people. And that's David's challenge to his enemies. Then in verse 5, he gives them a final piece of advice. Offer righteous sacrifices and trust in the Lord. Now, David has been driven from Jerusalem, and so he can no longer offer sacrifices there at the sanctuary. But he knows that those who have taken over the capital city will continue to make sacrifices and offerings at the sanctuary. In fact, the priests stayed there. David urged them to stay there when he fled. Now, David knows very well that it's not just simply offering sacrifices at the sanctuary which is going to make the offerings or the people acceptable to God. Now, the sacrifices are required to be offered in faith, that is, trusting in God as the one who will forgive sins, who will make his people righteous. They're to be offered in faith. They're to be offered in contrition. That is, with a humble heart, recognizing one's own sin. And without faith and without contrition, the sacrifices were completely in vain and completely displeasing to God. And that brings us to verse 6. Verses 2 through 5, as I said, are addressed to David's enemies. Verse 6 is addressed to people in David's own camp, those who have fled with him. Many are asking, who can show us any good? Let the light of your face shine upon us. From reflecting on the rebels, David turns in verse 6 to those in his own camp who are beginning to experience doubt as their plight looks more bleak with every passing moment. As they fled from Jerusalem, small in numbers in comparison with the army of Absalom, as they endured taunts and mockings along the way, they began to ask the question, to wonder, is God going to show us any good? Is God with us? Then, of course, David has these wonderful affirmations of trust. Let the light of your love shine upon us, O Lord. This is David's first affirmation. And those are beautiful words. And, of course, what they're taken from is the Aaronic benediction in the book of Numbers, at chapter 6, verses 24 through 26. And you all know that benediction. You've all heard it used in worship many times. This is the benediction that God gave to Aaron and his descendants to bless the people of Israel with. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn the light of his countenance towards you and give you peace. Now, what David has done here is to take two of those statements of that blessing and put them together. A beautiful prayer. Let the light of your face shine upon us. That's David's response to those who are expressing doubt and anxiety. And then David makes an astonishing statement of confidence. You have filled my heart with greater joy than when their, that's the enemies, than when their grain and new wine abound. David is able to say that it is the joy of his heart as he trusts in God which is more precious to him than any material blessing. Again, you see how appropriately this psalm fits in the situation of David fleeing from Absalom. His enemies are in possession of the capital city with all its storehouses. It may be that the time of year that David had to flee was harvest time, and so their grain and new wine in the harvest season are indeed abundant. And yet he's able to say that you have filled my heart with greater joy, here he is fleeing from his enemies, than they are experiencing, even though they have all the grain and all the new wine of the season. Now in the last verse, in verse 8, the psalm closes with this quiet confidence. As I quoted that guy earlier, it's like a lullaby dying peacefully away. I will lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. David will sleep in peace no matter how troubled his circumstances. For the real security that matters to David is the security of his fellowship with God. He's not thinking primarily of physical safety. He doesn't know what's going to happen yet. They're still on the run. They're in great difficulty with enemies in positions of power and apparent security. But David is thinking about the safety of his relationship with the Lord. These are beautiful words to pray at the close of a troubled day. And we all have lots of those troubled days.